His words program Patriots talk across the country.
What's the Patriots' ultimate goal for this year?
I think this offense is probably going to run the ball over 500 times.
Get up to date on the latest Patriots storylines with Tommy Curran.
So why is he so damn special that we have to call him Tom E. Curran?
Now on Dale and Keefe.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline is NBC Sports Boston Patriots reporter Tom E. Curran. Tom is brought to you by Zooty. Build any apps your company need fast. Visit Zooty.com for details. Tom is also brought to you by Northeast Electric, where pros need pros. Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Dale, I'm on top of the world. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. We mentioned this earlier. The NFL is reportedly tracking the situation in Seattle. The Mariners and Giants had to move their two-game series to San Francisco because of air quality issues. Are you hearing any more about the possibility of a problem for Sunday's game?
Well, it's still early out there. I know that Pete Carroll was concerned on Wednesday and said it would be a practice time decision as to whether they went outside or inside. The hope was that there was going to be some cleansing rain last night out in, on the West Coast to kind of bring some of the pollutants down. The feeling is that it should be, again, should be okay by the weekend, relatively speaking, and that they'd be able to play. But they have numbers and charts and radars and diagrams to let them know when it is and isn't safe. So I'm sure they're going to use those as their guide. But they're monitoring it, definitely, Dale.
Going back to Sunday's win over the Dolphins, anything stand out to you that was either much better than you anticipated or, on the other end, much worse than you anticipated?
The defense. I mean, I sat here and explained to everybody that you can't lose Kyle Van Noy and Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower and Patrick Chung and Danny Shelton and Alandon Roberts and have it not take a chunk out of you. And that didn't surface on Sunday really at all. And I thought that if you look at guys who made plays, Adrian Phillips, Chase Winovich, guys in the middle of the field, I thought Juwan Bentley had a good game. J.C. Jackson, who is a known quantity, but played well. Juwan Williams, Byron Coward. So these are the guys who we have banged the drum on our website, on our television show, and on this radio station about what did you get from those drafts? What did you get from acquisitions in 15, 16, 17, and 18? Throw Derek Rivers in there too. And at least first yield, you say, oh, good. That's good. They needed that to happen, and it did.
Yeah, Tom, down the stadium, one of the first things that I noticed, aside from the fact that it is just plain friggin' awkward having all these, you know, large grown, loud men playing football and having to be dead silent no matter where you are, was that the defense did play faster than I thought they would, that they were quick to the ball, that they had a decent pass rush at times, that everything was up-tempo, including obviously the fact that they were in motion a lot on offense. And especially, I thought the offensive line, which graded out as the highest offensive line in week one in the NFL, really played with purpose and power. Like guys like Jermaine Illuminor, who last year were sort of like a preseason afterthought, were out there mauling guys. Michael Onwenu saw action at right tackle and played great. Did how well the line play surprise you?
Not exactly, because as we knew that there was a lot of talent there. But what I did think happened that I agree with you on, Fitzy, is I think they warmed to the scheme.
Yeah.
When you're running the stuff that they are, you're Shaq Mason or Joe Tooney, and you get to pull and then just absolutely blast some guy who doesn't really know you're coming, whether it be a corner and an outside linebacker or even a defensive end, that's great. That's fun. And you're clearing holes in one spot that, hey, if you didn't do your job that great on that, you got a quarterback who can pull it back and take it around the end himself. So I think the offensive line is probably, look, it's a privilege to cover the guy. It was a privilege to block for the guy. I'm sure it was a privilege to catch passes from the guy. It was great. But there are elements to the Cam Newton's presence right now, Fitzy, that make him a better fit for week-to-week success than Tom Brady was. And I think that that is tied to the personnel here. That is, they're strong on the offensive line. They're strong on the secondary, so they can be aggressive up front. And they're not strong in other places, so run the ball. Take advantage of your strengths. Play to those.
We're talking to Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. When we looked at offensive snaps among the wide receivers for Sunday's game, the fact that Damiere Byrd had 19 more snaps than Julian Edelman did, and other guys had more snaps as well. Is he on a pitch count here?
I don't know. I mean, if he was, you would figure he probably wouldn't have gotten the jet sweep later and they wouldn't have stuck him back on punt returns. But certainly too, Dale, when you mentioned that, Bill did veer off in talking about punt returns and the deployment there. It was eye-opening, at least, to hear him at least allow that we probably don't want to put Julian back there as much. So he should be on a pitch count, given the fact that he saw the ball, you know, made 100 catches, saw the ball about 140 last year, and was sawdust by the end of the season. So it's good if they can get by limiting his reps. That's a huge bonus, Dale. It's a good observation. If you're going to, you know, you need him in November more than you need him in September.
Well, speaking of receivers, Tom, what do you think the appetite would be for them to explore the trade options and bring in a receiver at some point this season before the trade deadline? Obviously, Allen Robinson is going through, seems like, some contract issues with Chicago. Odell Beckham's name is always brought up. Could you see them going after one of those guys or somebody else?
Here's the thing about the trades. I wonder if they're once bitten, twice shy. They're without a second-round pick this past year because of Mohamed Sanu, and now they don't have Mohamed Sanu. They have tried to shore up the receiver position each of the last 2 years prior with Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon. Neither time did that pan out. They are obviously not in a great spot at that position in terms of talent and speed and the speed-size combo. You know, Jacoby Myers is probably the best speed-size combo. He runs like a 4.6. And I mean, yes, N'Keal Harry of speed. So, yeah, they're lacking there. But I find it hard to believe that in this year of, look, let's get the books balanced and get back right and stop chasing that last piece that'll help Tom win a championship, there might be a little bit more caution shown around the trade deadline, I think. You know, that's a question we're going to be asking over the next couple months, guys. Mm-hmm. Is this a team that you are a buyer for at the trade deadline or a seller from? And I wonder what you guys think. I mean, too early to tell, but my guess would be you're not going to be a buyer.
See, I think you could be. And I guess the question would be, are you only a buyer if you think you're an absolute Super Bowl contender? Because I think regardless of what you buy, you're behind the Kansas City Chiefs, but and maybe the Ravens. But everybody else, you're in there, and we've seen the Ravens have postseason struggles the last couple of years. So if you think you can make a move that makes you the third best team in the AFC, to me, it would be worth doing.
And they're going to have ultimate confidence in that. And by the end of last year, I'm looking at it as, well, you got ass-whipped by Baltimore, Kansas City, and Houston, and you lost at home
to Tennessee
in the second to last game to the Dolphins. So were you really a receiver away? When you got Sanu, were you really that close? And it's worth talking about how competitive are they with the good teams? They did what they should have done, even though I didn't think that they were going to be capable of it against Miami because I thought it was too new. But what's their ceiling, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to think that with some of the guys that are on IR and some of the guys that are popping kind of early, that they may be more competitive throughout the season. I mean, I had them at 10-6. I know you had them at 8-8, I believe, Tom. I think this is the team, and I think Sunday, I think they lose Sunday, but I think that it's going to be an absolute rock fight against Seattle. And to that point, I wonder how much do you think, I mean, I believe the Pats will probably throw more this Sunday, that obviously there was a lot of running that was probably matchup dependent, but do you think that the way that they orchestrated the offense on Sunday was matchup dependent? Or was a lot of that like, all right, guys, let's get this out there on tape. So now we've got Seattle thinking about it. And let's get all the teams thinking like we got to watch out for the read option, RPO, zone runs, et cetera, the rest of the season. Because there's an unpredictability and a newness to this Patriots offense that other teams just aren't ready for or have to worry more about as they prepare to play the Patriots.
Yeah, I think some teams are going to be, look, we're a we-do-what-we-do kind of defense anyway. So, yeah, they did that to Miami, and Miami plays, you know, man everywhere. And they're a two-gap team, and they use, you know, linebacker blitzes. Seattle has been a we-do-what-we-do type team defensively. They play zone, so that lends you to believe that, you know, there's going to be more throws, as we've seen, whether it be the Atlanta Super Bowl or the Super Bowl 49 or the San Diego game. Any of those cover three schemes – there are alleys to throw. That's how the Patriots have gotten by throwing it to James White or Shane Vereen or James White probably this Sunday. So they'll probably throw more, not as a reaction, and McDaniels was alluding to this, so I'm kind of going off what he said, not as a reaction to, hey, now we're going to zig because they zagged. It's going to be more, hey, we can't do what we did against these guys the way we did to Miami because they're just a different team. We should throw. That will be our place to use Julian Edelman, to use James White.
Tom, we learned that last night Bill Belichick's mom, Jeanette, passed away at the age of 98. He did not do his media availability today. I don't know if he's at practice today.
He is.
Okay. And our thoughts, obviously, are with the Belichick family. Do we know what his plans are for the week yet?
He's going to be doing a press conference with us tomorrow morning on WebEx, and I would imagine they will be standard the same way they kind of were when his dad passed in 05. So certainly, yeah, and to absolutely echo, you know, the thoughts and prayers to him and his family because, you know, he's an only child and, you know, his parents were unbelievable teachers, and I don't know what it's like to be an only child, but they seemed like they had a very cool, loving, studious, disciplined household. And his mother was a French teacher, Spanish teacher, both, I think. And she was a great linguist, and I think she learned a lot. Excuse me. He learned a lot about teaching and learning from her as much as Steve Belichick we credit. So it's interesting when you look at why is Bill the way he is, and maybe the family unit explains a lot as to how they approached things and him being an only child and just as inquisitive as he is. And you guys have sat there, I'm sure, over the course of time have all had conversations with him where you realize, wow, I'm doing most of the talking here. It's because he actually asks questions when he's in a relaxed setting where he wants to gather information. He's an inquisitive person. And I think that, you know, probably a lot of that can be traced back to how he was brought up and where he was brought up and the family unit that he had. So it's sad, I would imagine, even though she was 98, and I don't think she was in great health for the last several years. It's sad to see that because it is, you know, his only surviving parent.
Tom, what was your takeaway from Tom Brady's debut with the Bucs, as well as Rob Gronkowski's return to the league?
Start with Gronk. He looked like a guy getting into a cold pool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really did.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And there's so much mental that enters into it with him. We saw it here. Remember when he got hit in Denver in 2015? And it turned out to be a thigh bruise, but he was rolling around in the snow. And you thought, oh, my God, I think they're going to have to amputate. He got hit on the calf, right on the side of the knee on that little screen that he caught. And I'm just watching him afterwards, kind of a little limping. And then he blocked well on the next down. But I think that you go from a year in which you finally got to breathe a sigh of relief. My body's not going to get punished. Now you're back in it again because I don't know why. I mean, did you feel an allegiance to Tom? Did you hunger for the, you know, limelight in the competition? Do you really want to do this? So I think that's going to be really fascinating to watch as the year goes along. He's still going to be a physical mismatch, but you have to bring the attitude with you. And as for Brady, look, 23 for 36 is not a horrible day. They couldn't run the ball on first down. I did find that interesting that they really made a commitment to run early in downs. So they were a little bit behind the sticks, but the throw to the sideline, I don't care if he's 26, 36, 43. We've seen him throw balls to the sideline that have been picked by Delta and O'Neal or Champ Bailey or now Janoris Jenkins. There was nothing I saw, to sum it up, that made me say he's too old. But there were elements that I saw that made me say, this learning curve could be hard. But then what do you guys think about the level of competition that he was facing? That's probably the best team in the NFC. And it was a one-score game for a lot of it.
Oh, way more talent. And I thought both were kind of not great. I thought Drew Brees wasn't very good. He just happened to win. I think
he looked worse than Brady.
I agree with that. I think this week will be pretty telling. Carolina, I believe, Tampa is facing.
They're home against Carolina, yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a team you should be able to put up some points on. And so hopefully it looks a little bit smoother. What did you think, Tom, of Bruce Arians?
Oof.
Post-game, putting both picks on Brady. The next day, he took away one, talking about Evans, but then still was pretty harsh and critical of Brady, something that Belichick probably very much was behind the scenes, but not as openly to everybody else.
Yeah, that's what's fascinating, because that is his MO. I mean, that's nothing new. I mean, he lacerates guys in post-game press conferences, and he did it in a kind of a pointed way with Brady, in terms of, look, it's okay to say you made a bad throw, and that's not what the mistake was on him. But to take it to the next step with, he's got to show a little bit of grit and determination, and to say, look, we saw all this stuff before. I don't know if he was scared or nervous. That's anteing up a little bit on the mental aspect of it, which I would be surprised if Brady didn't hear that, knowing the guy for, you know, 3 or 4 months, say, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, let's not get ridiculous here. But on the other hand, too, this is fun Bruce as opposed to not fun Bill.
That's right.
So I'm sure that he was a little taken aback. I you know, reached out to some folks in Foxborough, and they said that's probably not going to go over real big with him. I didn't ask directly down there to find out, because I probably figured it was a little bit too close to the bone for now. I'll find out later. But his reaction probably doesn't need prompting from Bruce Arians. But it is a really interesting dynamic to look at, because you can say that, but then there's a point at which you're driving home and you're like, if we don't understand what to do on a blooped onside kick, it really doesn't matter if I throw outside instead of taking the option screen, if we can't even execute simple plays like that on special teams.
Yeah, you might want to go back to the old Johnny Foxborough days if you're going to keep getting called out by old fun Bruce down there. Last question for me, Tom. I know, it's just all so weird, but last question for me, back to Sunday. That game could have been blown open in the third quarter had N'Keal Harry not done something that Belichick preaches you not do and try to reach pylon, fumble through the end zone, and that was a 14-point swing. Do you see the Patriots seeing potential in what Harry did Sunday and trying to work him in more, or is there going to reach a level of frustration where, like, he gets trucked by a cornerback 35 pounds his junior? He fumbles through the end zone. Like, every time the guy makes one step forward, he takes two steps back. Is there still, do you think, the confidence in that building to get this guy going and turn him into an asset, or will the diminishing returns eventually not yield for him?
No, 100% there's confidence. I mean, he's 10 games in, so he was a first-round pick. The body is there, the physical ability. Look, he should not have slowed down on the sideline and tried to cut back. But we've seen him beast people before, too. So I'm going to say, okay, that was a miscalculation. It happened. But the other stuff's mental. I mean, yes, it's great to try and figure out a way that you can get the ball to the goal line. But once you started moving it, these are still things that he's learning, because he missed so much of last year and went to Arizona State that he doesn't know. So if you slow down, even though that guy's 5'9", 185, he's going to decleat you. If you move the ball a little bit, the defender who's bringing you down might sense it and knock it loose. He's going to get better. He's just got to stop with, just do what you can do first.
Finally, finally, before
that's
we let you go, there were fans, there were fans in Kansas City and Jacksonville only last weekend. This weekend, there will be fans in Miami, Dallas, Cleveland, and Indianapolis only. Are you hearing any early rumblings about owners, general managers, or coaches not liking the fact that in some places they can have fans and other places they can't?
100%. Yes, that is something that is, you know, going to present itself throughout the season. I think coaches in particular are going to start to feel that way. And then owners are going to get there, because where would the Patriots like to open up? They'd like to open up the Optum Club. They'd like to open up, you know, some of these suites. The people who spend a lot of money to support that football team, they'd like to get those open for people to be in there. Socially distanced, masked up, whatever. That's my perception. So it's not going to stop. It's something I heard plenty of in the offseason. But it's going to probably ratchet up as schools open, football opens, and we get back to business just a little bit.